This is Mike Delp with the Relaxed Back UK Show. On the Relaxed Back UK Show, we explore all kinds of health topics, so keep listening and enjoy the ride.
Hi, and thank you for joining me, Mike Delp, with this week's Relaxed Back UK Show. Interesting question this week. Why do we do what we do? A very difficult question in any area of human endeavour. Why on earth do we behave as we do? And I guess if I knew the answer, I'd be a millionaire, a billionaire. Probably, you know, I'd be whatever I wanted to be. This episode of Relaxed Back UK, I delve into this topic with respect to cancer. There are quite a few screening programmes and opportunities to get things checked out if they don't seem quite right, but we don't all get involved with them. And I explore some of the reasons why and why we might be just rather reluctant to get involved.
And how systems might be best set up to support engagement with opportunities to diagnose cancer earlier and live better with cancer.
Dr. Sammy Quaife is a behavioural scientist and studies the why we do what we do question. We're also joined by Jackie, who is a cancer patient advocate and a patient herself.
And also, what we mustn't forget is that in some communities, cancer is still regarded as a dirty disease, and you must have done something to deserve it.
So please do stay with us for a fascinating discussion. Thank you.
The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Love and laugh. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Kiss me quick. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The City of London Major Centre is a world-class hub for cancer biotherapeutics, bringing together researchers from four of London's cancer research centres, and they are University College London, King's College London, Barts Queen Mary University of London, and the Francis Crick Institute. So the discussion that's about to happen, and discussions I've had in the past with scientists from the City of London Centre, they really do bring the big brains working on cancer in the world, really, to the show. So with that build-up, let's meet the guests.
My guests today are Sammy Quaife, who is a scientist, and I'm going to ask in a moment exactly what sort of scientist she is, and Jackie, who's a cancer patient advocate. So the information I have on you, Sammy, is that you are a behavioural scientist. So the first question really has got to be, what is that? What do behavioural scientists do?
Yeah, so they are really interested in human behaviour across lots of different areas, and really things that affect that behaviour in your biology, in your psychology, in your social environment, kind of broadly speaking, anything that affects behaviour and how we might change behaviour and where it's a good thing to do that.
So why we do what we do?
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm a psychologist by background, with sort of training in health psychology. So specifically psychology around sort of health and disease and things like that.
Right. Okay. And so if we do get ill, might want to do about it, and what habits we have that might make us get ill in the first place, that kind of thing. All right. So how and why is that relevant to cancer, which is kind of the topic here?
Yeah, well, it's really relevant because a lot of the ways in which we can support people in having better outcomes from cancer are through supporting, you know, positive behavior and enabling sort of access to those different opportunities. So we look at behavior on a population level. Often psychologists are sort of typically pictured in a sort of counseling room working one-to-one with someone, but we look at how sort of different populations behave and how systems might be best set up to support engagement with opportunities to diagnose cancer earlier and live better with cancer.
Right, so you're talking big data here.
Yeah, well, big and small. We do lots of studies with understanding kind of in-depth views from people as well, because they're often really rich sources of information that we can use to understand behaviour, as well as sort of the big numbers in order to see how common sort of behaviours might be.
Yeah. All right. So let's sort of shrink that down a little bit, and with kind of your knowledge and what you've gleaned by figuring out how we all work, make that more relevant to cancer. Because a big thing about cancer, I should just explain, right? I'm not a scientist. I'm for the purpose of this, I'm Joe Public. I don't have any more knowledge than anyone else, and considerably less knowledge than you two, I suggest. But a big thing about surviving cancer is getting to know about it early. So do you sort of look at how on earth can Joe Public or Mike Dilk be persuaded to think, maybe I need to go and see the doctor, I'm a bit worried about this, or if there's some kind of screening program that is offered to try and persuade Mike Dilk to get involved?
Yeah, exactly that. So my research is really focused in cancer screening, and specifically cancer screening for lung cancer. But exactly this, how do we support people in considering a screening offer? It's not the case that we necessarily persuade them, because it's someone's choice as to whether they want to take part in screening or not. But we want to make sure that the way that programs communicate screening and offer screening is suitable for everybody across the population and kind of supports access if they want to. And the other side of it, which I do less work in, but lots of colleagues work in, is supporting people in actually noticing that they have a symptom of cancer. Often early symptoms of cancer can be very similar to symptoms of other things and really difficult to notice. You might know something is in theory a symptom of cancer, but not suspect it perhaps when you do have it. So helping to support people in recognizing those symptoms and feeling confident and able to go to primary care, who are obviously the first port of call in terms of supporting and sure, understanding what might be wrong.
So there's kind of two avenues to look at. There's the screening process, and if people are slightly worried or they notice there's something slightly different, sort of getting them to think about doing something about that, whatever it might be. So let's start off with the screening. So I'm 56, and I can't remember when it was. Maybe when I turned 55, I got an envelope through the post from the NHS to do with bowel screening. I was invited to put a bit of poo in this little plastic container and send it back. And my initial thought, given this opportunity, is, why wouldn't you? You know, if you're presented with a chance to find out something that could save your life, I did it the next day. Now, I freely admit that I might be a bit weird. Why doesn't everyone just do it the next day and go along? So actually, let's bring in Jackie, the patient advocate at this point. Is this something that people you talk to, other cancer patients, chat about?
I suspect there might be something to do with denial. I know I put off having a test or going to see my doctor for 6 months. Everything turned out fine, but in that 6 months, well, you know, all sorts could have happened. Also, do you find, Sammy, that there are differences between men and women in how they approach these things? Do more women go for screening as opposed to men? Do more women do the bowel cancer screening? I don't know. What's your view?
Yeah, and that's so interesting, Jackie, that sort of idea of denial. And I'm always interested in kind of unpicking what that is, because often it's people are worried about the consequences, or they're worried that something might be wrong. And cancer has had such a sort of, for good reason and for, you know, people's experience of it, terrible reputation. But actually, the outcomes from early detection are often so good that sort of fear kind of ends up, or denial sort of ends up leading you to wait longer. Whereas actually, if people were, had sort of seen more positive outcomes, they might be quicker to go forwards. But the question around men and women is a really interesting one. The only cancer screening program that's offered to everybody who's eligible in the UK to both sort of sexes is bowel cancer screening. And actually, I'm not quite sure of the evidence in that context. So I know that they were trying out a different kind of bowel cancer screening previously, which used something called a flexible sigmoidoscopy, which is a sort of tube put into your colon to look for very, very early cancers, or actually pre-cancers. And I know there was a gender difference there, but typically kind of in other health interventions, men sort of get a bit of a bad press for not coming forwards for them. But yeah, certainly in lung cancer screening, we've seen slightly men being slightly less likely to come forward for screening, but actually often it's the same.
Okay. I was wondering as well whether you found differences in response in ethnic groups. I noticed in your papers that the numbers of people from different groups and from different cultures was too small to analyse. But of course, there are taboos, aren't there, in some cultures against doing that sort of test.
Yeah.
And did you when you created the leaflet mentioned in one of these, the lung screen uptake trial, was it?
Yeah.
Did you give the same leaflet to everybody regardless, or did you design different leaflets for different communities?
Yeah, and so that just as a little bit of background, that was a study that developed some information that was designed to reduce inequalities in participation in lung cancer screening. And specifically, we're interested in making sure that people who experienced deprivation weren't less likely to attend, and people with long-term tobacco dependence weren't less likely. And so we designed that leaflet really to address some of the concerns that we'd observed through our research about lung cancer, about it being something that can't be treated when it is very treatable to an early stage, about treatment not being very tolerable when actually often it's can just sort of be, I say just, but is keyhole surgery and removes a small bit of lung. So we sort of tried to address concerns around stigma, around fear of being diagnosed, and around treatment. We use the same leaflet for everybody because of the way the system works. So invitation to screening typically come from a central system.
Yes,
and sure. You know, actually the leaflet, we didn't have the evidence to know which leaflet to give who anyway. In the future though, we're really interested in how we might sort of tailor the information that goes to different populations to sort of suit them best. But in that scenario, yeah, we're sort of comparing that against a control.
So Jackie, you've kind of introduced a very interesting topic there. I kind of cut you off a little bit, but as far as the different sorts of people that might put themselves forward to be part of a program or a screening test, what have you found, Sammy, as far as well, there are some very broad things, you know, different geographical areas and different socioeconomic areas. I mean, those two subjects in themselves are quite large, but have you found any sort of generalizations?
Well, I've been, oh sorry, you first, Sammy.
Either of you. All right, Sammy first.
Oh, I'll I'll go first then. So, yes, we see across the board, across cancer screening programs, that those living within communities experiencing higher deprivation are less likely to participate. We also see inequalities based on ethnic background. My research is focused in lung cancer screening, which isn't something that's yet implemented across the UK. We hope it will be, but not yet. But we've recently published some research suggesting that actually people who are from white European backgrounds, such as those in Polish and Turkish communities, are less likely to take part. So we do unfortunately see these same health inequalities persisting in cancer screening and also in sort of, you know, health interventions that improve or prevent disease more widely.
And so how about the, you know, that's the sort of people that don't come forward? I suppose the really difficult question, it could be, you know, well, why wouldn't they? Any thoughts on that? Either of you, say Jackie.
Some cultures really regard things like colonoscopy as being a bit taboo. And men will require colonoscopy teams to be all male, and women will require their teams to be all female. And it's a very difficult process for them to go through and endure. And also, what we mustn't forget is that in some communities, cancer is still regarded as a dirty disease, and you must have done something to deserve it. That view prevailed until the 1950s and the 60s here in the UK, didn't it? And we need to, what is it? One in four people are going to get it, be diagnosed with it. So perhaps we need to change that aspect of the culture as well.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of my research is really focused on that understanding why inequalities in participation exist, and like I say, in the context of lung cancer, but working with researchers sort of across different disease areas. And we tend to sort of categorize them in sort of three big groups, which helps me anyway to wrap my head. One is sort of around motivation. So as Jackie was saying, kind of cultural historical taboos or concerns or fears or worries around cancer as a disease. And understandably, when you've experienced someone in your close family network or friends or whoever go through a cancer experience that, you know, was distressing, then those experiences really loom largely in your mind when you're being invited for these sorts of things. The other sort of area is around actually people's capability to attend and as well their opportunities. So some populations might not be able to take time off work. You might have other things going on in your life that are really difficult to manage, caring responsibilities, other health conditions. Your post might not get to you if you're you don't have, you know, if you're living in a large group of accommodation where post is sort of not as reliably received, you know, that you might not be able to get there. There's so many different factors that affect, you know, you might not understand the language in which it comes that could affect whether or not you attend. So we try and look quite holistically at things that help to sort of address misperceptions or concerns around cancer, but also that make sure that the screening program is as accessible as possible in terms of getting there and being able to take the time to do so, and being able to prioritize that within your own kind of life as well, when there may be other stresses and things going on where, you know, this is early detection. So it's not like this is for people without symptoms. So you might put that off further down the line if you have other things that you feel are important to do.
There really are an awful lot of variables. You know, there's not sort of one reason fits all. But you said your expertise is more in the lung cancer side of things. One thought that I had is if someone's an ex-smoker, there might be a feeling or a worry of being judged, and I can imagine that might really be the case with people like me. You know, I'm a white guy, I'm 56. And I can imagine that being a concern of people in my sort of sphere. Is that something you've come across?
Yeah, and we find actually that people who lung cancer screening is offered in some regions of England through a program that NHS England run, a targeted lung health check program. But like I say, we're hoping that it will be rolled out across the UK in the future.
Actually, what does the screening consist of? What is the test? I don't even know that.
Yeah, so it's a CT scan, but it's a low dose CT scan. So that just means it uses less radiation than a CT scan that's used for the purpose of diagnosing, for example.
So it's not really an unpleasant experience. You know, it doesn't hurt. It'll take you a couple of hours. You know, it will take you half a morning or something.
You're in there for a few minutes. And the CT is not a tunnel. People often are concerned it's an MRI scan. So it just circles around the chest. There's no injections or dye. It's very quick and straightforward. Now there are some sort of screening sites that offer screening within mobile units, so they may be closer by too. What we've observed consistently is that people, screening is only offered to people who meet a certain risk for lung cancer. Typically those who have a long-term history of tobacco smoking, either now or in the past. And we find that those who used to smoke are far more likely to attend than those who currently smoke. And again, the sort of issues around blame and stigma are really persisting. That's what we've observed in our research, which is awful because, of course, it's a dependence, it's an addiction. It's something that is, you know, cigarettes are a product that are designed to keep you dependent and keep you coming back. So it's lung screening services completely understand that and want to support people, and there's, you know, should be no question about whether or not they've smoked. But yeah, that is a sort of prevailing factor that unfortunately people feel blame for, which they shouldn't.
I'm sure when people go for the screening test that they get a very warm reception and welcome, you know, practically even if they arrive with a cigarette in hand, you know. I'm sure they are very well catered to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's complete understanding and support. If they do.
I liked your mention of mobile units, because when I was a child, there used to be mobile X-ray. Just sort of pop yourself in a major shopping centre and people would queue up to check that they hadn't got TB.
Right,
So you can tell how long ago that was. You've got to make it easy for people, haven't you?
Yes.
So, you know, parking in the middle of Sainsbury's or Tesco's car park just might be a really good idea. But of course, if you're limiting your audience to calling for people who are at risk, that might be quite difficult.
Yeah, and it has, you know, moving, and like you say, when I was talking earlier about sort of course, motivational factors and attitudes and perceptions are really, really important, but actually just making things easy to do. We think that is such an important thing in all our lives. You know, we're all busy, and making something as easy as possible to do is often a good step in the right direction.
There are some programs which I think have been very successful and essentially saved a lot of lives. And I'm thinking probably breast cancer screening. Has that been the most successful one in the UK? That's my thoughts on it.
I can't say with any certainty, because I'm not really sure about the statistics around it, but certainly, you know, breast cancer screening and cervical cancer screening are very well established programs and have, you know, brilliant outcomes in terms of women being diagnosed early. So, yeah. And of course, the new, not new, I suppose, anymore, but the HPV vaccination that prevents cervical cancer by, preventing HPV infection. That's you know, hugely game changer in cervical cancer.
So, and of course, other cancers as well are prevented, aren't they? Because quite a few cancers are promoted by HPV, aren't they?
Yes. They are.
Other cancers will be, stopped as well, which is a good thing.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
So those vaccines are a good idea.
Sorry?
Those vaccines are a good idea.
HPV vaccines, yes, yeah. Might be, definitely.
Yeah. So I suppose one thought could be, why have those programs been so successful? And I don't have the statistics, but my thought is actually they've been fairly successful across all sorts of people in the UK, all different regions, and all different socioeconomic areas and different types of people. They seem to have cut across everything and had great success. This is an impossible question, so I kind of apologise in advance, Sammy. But, you know, does anyone know why that is?
Yeah, so actually there are the inequalities persist in those programs too. Okay. Yeah, so they have been successful in terms of the kind of overall number of people attending. As I say, lung cancer isn't a thing across the UK yet, but they have had much better participation and still do. But yeah, those same inequalities are persisting, unfortunately. And actually, even with regard to your smoking history, people who are currently smoking are less likely to attend those as well. So yeah, this is what I was sort of saying earlier. We're sort of seeing the same persistence of inequalities.
Cervical cancer screening has been very, very popular as well, hasn't it? You know, and being very successful. It's even more so when somebody who's in the media eye, such as Jay Goody, gets it, and that prompts a lot of women to think, oh, yes, I haven't been, have I? Perhaps it's time I went and asked my doctor.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we were talking earlier about the reasons why or why not people may take part and those being really complicated, but actually how you change or kind of support people in attending is really tricky. But stories like that loom really large in people's minds because it's a person that you know and that you can relate to that's gone through that, and it's often a much more powerful tool for communicating than the leaflet that says, you know, outcomes are better with early detection. That kind of line is brilliant, but the impact that has on someone's behavior can be less than a sort of powerful case study like Jade's.
Well, yes, busy mums, you know, taking children to school, cooking the dinner and what have you. I do remember it's difficult to get time off.
Yeah.
You know, to go and deal with your own health.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's just for a moment park the screenings to one side. And at the start, we were talking about people, if they're kind of slightly concerned about something seems not quite right, going to the doctor, going to the GP or whatever, and getting it checked out, which is another kind of vital part of early diagnosis. We're still pretty bad at that, generally speaking. Is that the case, Sammy?
Go
on, Jackie.
From a patient point of view, we aren't told when we've had our cancer and we're cured. Hopefully, you know, we're told, okay, you can go and live your life now. We aren't told what to watch for, and we do need to be vigilant and look for signs. But what signs do we watch for? Now, there's a woman called Jo Taylor who runs a breast cancer charity. She's designed a beautiful set of images. What to look for? Do you have you started to cough? After breast cancer, this is to detect spread. Have you started to cough? Are you having aches in your bones in a particular place pretty well all the time? And they're very valuable, these images. They show you what to look for and what to be aware of.
Yeah.
Now, if we all had those for whatever cancer we have, I think people might go earlier then as well.
Yeah.
Is that something that in your sort of professional sphere you get asked about or deal with, Sammy?
Yeah, that's really interesting way of supporting people to kind of know which symptoms to look for, and like I say, communicate, a good tool for communicating that. I think just to say GPs do a fantastic job in seeing us and, you know, helping us with the whole array of, you know, millions of conditions and things that we go in to see them with. And I suppose when you have an early symptom, it's difficult both from your point of view as an individual to notice that that's not just, you know, if we're thinking about persistent cough, well, you know, have I just had a chest infection, or, you know, is it cold or whatever? Some of these symptoms seem quite benign and often are. So, you know, if the number of those symptoms that a GP sees on a daily basis is huge, and picking out the person that actually it's an early sign of cancer is a very challenging thing to do, that they, you know, do very well, but it we can't get away from the fact that it is a very difficult to do in every single circumstance. So there are challenges on both sides. As Jackie was sort of saying earlier, reasons why you might not immediately want to go if you're worried that you do have a symptom, if you're concerned that actually you're going to have some bad news, or you don't yet realize that actually the quicker you go, actually the more that you can be offered. So it's, I guess there are sort of similarities in terms of how people might think about going for screening, in terms of how they might think about going to their GP first of all. But it often is, some of these symptoms can be really vague and difficult to recognize yourself, even if you know, right, this is a symptom, and you go to your GP, or you don't go because you think, well, I've, you know, had that cold the other week or whatever, and it's probably just that. So I guess it's, if in doubt, definitely go to see your GP. And if at that point in time something isn't resolved, it's just about keeping an eye, and often the GP will say, you know, if it doesn't change in 2 weeks, come back, and definitely then going back rather than thinking that you're bothering the GP. As there was some research done that compared sort of different countries, and actually in the UK, people are really worried about wasting their doctor's time.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for all sorts of reasons, but I think that often, and it's crazy, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And you know, doctors are really busy, but they also, you know, every time you see any communication, they say, come and see us if you're worried, if something's not right for you. But yeah, sort of almost feel like you have to kind of ration it a bit so you're not taking up their time.
Certainly. So, I mean, it seems to boil down to kind of communication, clarity of communication, and ease of communication. So kind of with that in mind, Sammy, if people want to find out about cancer screening, specifically lung cancer screening, but screening in general, or if they want to find out, there's a list of, I'm getting up to pee in the middle of the night for men, you know, the classic one, but sort of symptoms like that that they can look at and think, oh, hang on a moment, that might be me. Perhaps I should ask some more questions. What's the next stop? Where can people get some really good, solid, but simple information?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously I have to say, if anyone's worried about any sort of symptom, I mean, as you know, I'm not a medical doctor, the first point of call is your GP. In terms of sources of information, NHS website has clear information about cancer screening programs that are available, and symptoms of different cancers. Cancer Research UK have really good information on their website about different symptoms and availability of cancer screening programs. Lung cancer screening is, like I say, not something that's offered across the UK at the moment. So, but information about the NHS England's targeted lung health check program is available on the Roy Castle Lung Cancer Foundation website, for example. They're a really good source of information and resources for people who are concerned about lung cancer.
Okay. And Jackie, earlier on, you mentioned specifically kind of a list of things to look out for if you had breast cancer, and for things to look out after that, which was a very specialised one. But where can people find that? And
well, if you Google Joe Taylor, or look for Joe Taylor on Twitter, you'll find her website and find her information images. But as I say, it's only for breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So I do think that approach would be very good for many other cancers.
So that's a gap in the information that's potentially required, possibly.
Yes, I think everybody means well. and we can go and live our life free of cancer. But it's not like that. You do need to be vigilant and watch for odd symptoms that might alert you to the fact you need to go and see your GP.
Yeah, okay. But certainly, if you're invited for a screening and you can go, please go. Yeah.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. All right. And although, definitely, but I guess from my perspective as well, go and have a chat and have a talk about it with the other. Just even if you're not sure, you can go along and have a conversation with the health professional that's offering it to you. It's not something you have to do. It's an, you know, it should be an informed choice, but obviously it can find cancer early. So if you're not sure, then someone's always there to have a conversation with you about it.
And of course, there are forums, aren't there, that offer support in this sort of instance. I mean, Breast Cancer Now has a forum where patients and people who aren't patients can register, and there are nurses there who can offer advice to you, which will probably be go and see your GP, but you know, that's fine. So
the people that are giving the advice are knowledgeable and know what they're doing.
Yes,
yeah,
they are important. They're trained, properly trained.
Yeah.
And of course, for breast cancer screening, I think women can still walk into screening centres, can't they? And if that's the case, that's very helpful.
So I think really that the summary's got to be aware and do your best to, you know, find out and about the different symptoms. And if you're invited to a screening situation, think seriously about going. I think that's probably the best summary we can come up with. And I can see Sammy and Jackie, you're both nodding your heads. Yes. So I think it probably leaves for me to say thank you very much indeed for taking a few minutes to chat about this, because it is an important topic.
Oh, pleasure. So, thanks so much for the opportunity, and great to meet you both.
Please do remember, if you are listening on the podcast version, to subscribe and like the show. Many thanks to my guests this week. They were Dr. Sammy Quaife and Jackie, cancer patient advocate. And of course, thank you to you for listening, and have a healthy week. Until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory, E bar gum.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
That was the Relaxed Back UK show with me, Mike Dill. Thank you for listening, and please do join us again next time.